We'll kick those tires and start that galactic fire, for we are indeed camping interstellarly tonight. My guest, of course, is the star of the non-existent series We're Science, but I just made that up now, so he's going to enjoy it. With me is a very gifted author and someone who has that rare quality of having been bestowed with both hands, by God, of being both very funny and knows what he's talking about. Now, I thought for years I was the only one who fit that mold, but then I was reminded that I actually don't know what I'm talking about. So it is my privilege and esteemed honor to welcome someone who actually does know a thing or two. He is an incredible author, and he wrote some niche little book called The Martian, which of course took Matt Damon to save. No one had heard about, and he's somewhat, for some reason, available and here with us today. So please welcome to the program, Andy Weir.
I was told I'd get a sandwich.
No, you won't get a sandwich, but that is a great segue. And
there was
reminder.
A sandwich voucher, maybe?
A sandwich. Well, we don't have a sandwich sponsor yet, so Subway, Hey, we're waiting for you. $5 footlong on Mars. But we do want to, of course, thank our special sponsor, Keto Crisp. So whether you find yourself on a desert island in the middle of an urban city or perhaps stranded on Mars, of course, you can turn to the delicious, wholesome ingredients and balanced macronutrient profiles of Keto Crisp. Matt, that is for you. I'm interviewing your hero today. Fist bump, beep, beep. Those who've read it, they know what they're talking about.
Fist my bump.
That's right. So go to Can Do Foods and enter promo code Went Camping for 25% off your galactic journey to better health. That was great. Okay.
Nice.
I know. We just got to do that. For the catering
the ad directly to the... Yeah, it's good. Good job.
Honestly, Keto Crisp, they are great. I'm curious, you in your Wikipedia article, which of course is canon at this point, right? I mean, scripture essentially about you.
Yes, Wikipedia is never wrong.
Never wrong. Anything with wiki in it is generally good for most things, right? So it famously states that you have an aversion to flying. You and John Madden both were famous non-flyers. I'm curious, what is that, if you don't mind me asking, what is that rooted in? And then are we still no flying? Because I know a lot of people who've flown like Spirit Airlines and then subsequently developed that same aversion.
Well, I've had a lifelong struggle with anxiety, all jokes aside, like I really have. And one of the ways it manifests is this crippling fear of flying. Logically, I know that it's the safest form of transport and that like I'm not going to die in a plane crash, or at least it's catastrophically unlikely. But my fears and anxieties aren't interested in logic. I got medication, you know, the long-term anti-anxiety medication that helped me out a lot. Takes a while to kick in, but once it started working, it wasn't like magically I'm not anxious anymore. It's just less so. And things that used to really get me all uptight now only annoy me. You know, it's so that was part of it. And also just popping Valium like Fez. That's what gets me on planes. My doctor.
So you do travel now.
I do. Yeah, I will fly now, but I have to be sedated. And so like my doctor and I, she just kept giving me, she said, try this. And, you know, I'm like, that's not even close, not even close to enough. Like I can take, so she'd be like, try this medication. She'd give me some medication. I'd take it. And then I'd just sit in my living room and I'd be like, nope, still really, really anxious, even just sitting here. So we just kept escalating and escalating and escalating until finally it just got to, she's like, yeah, screw it, Valium. And she's like, that'll absolutely take care of it for you. And it does. It basically makes me go night night. And that's how I like to fly.
Wow. Okay. So basically you're like the flight in Inception, where you need that cabin isolated, hook you up. We can actually go into your brain and find out your next best-selling novel. I'm assuming you can fly coach then if you're knocked out, right?
I could, but I usually fly first class because I'm old and I have a lot of money and my back hurts and all sorts of stuff. Also, it's a little easier to just zonk out and fall asleep in the larger seats.
That is true. I get to
board first, which is also important because, you know, volume takes about half an hour to kick in. So I take it about half an hour before boarding. So by the time I get on the plane, I'm just like,
I don't know if you're a Modern Family fan, but there was a great episode with Cam and Mitch, and they took their sleeping pills and then they got delayed, and so they had to come off the flight. They were like ready and they got woken up to come back, and they fell asleep out in the airport, and they're just like still conked out on there. So I understand timing has got to be pretty critical there, but I'm glad you're flying, because I read in there, again, in the lore of Wikipedia, that you didn't get to go to Budapest for filming of The Martian, but for Hail Mary Project, you'll definitely be there. But that one's actually in space. That one's filmed on location.
filmed on location, right. They invited me out to Budapest, where they were Budapest and Wadi Rum, which is in Jordan, where they were shooting The Martian. But yeah, I couldn't handle flying yet. I had worked out the magic formula. The magic formula is Valium.
Okay, that's a
we'd like to thank our sponsor Pfizer or whatever.
Don't mention Pfizer on here. We will be flagged as misinformation. I can't see now. It's in the transcript. YouTube has already flagged this as
well. They clip that out.
I mean, COVID misinformation.
COVID misinformation.
I appreciate the candor and the, because I know anxiety through the pandemic too has just been skyrocketing. And this is something you wrestled with this for a long time. I'm curious.
Yeah, a lot of people only recently came to anxiety. I was born to it. I was molded.
You're OG.
By it.
You're like, I was, you're like Bane. You're like,
I was born to anxiety. You only adopted it. To speak like Bane, I'd have to go. Alan Tudyk, best Bane.
Oh my gosh, so you're an OG, so proud. You're like a proud anxiety OG.
Proud.
did pandemic exasperate that? And then I'm curious about how success, because I have anxiety sometimes, like when I was, when I create getting feedback from my friends on something, right? So I can't imagine.
I think that's normal. I mean,
okay. No, but you put out a novel that's now,
I mean, I'm
like
surprised
by the world,
friends, but I mean, no, I mean, there's normally, I mean, being nervous about stuff like that, that's normal. That's normal human behavior. Anxiety is really when it's life limiting, when you're missing out on things because of irrational fears, you know? And I was missing out on a whole world that I couldn't access because it was too far away. Mm. So that's why I urge anybody who feels like they're suffering from anxiety to get help. I spent my whole life just thinking, well, I'm broken. That's how it is. What are you going to do? But I mean, you can get help. Like they've got pretty good pills now. And oftentimes it's just a chemical issue that can be fixed or at least greatly ameliorated. And you can be happy or happier at least. And it's like if you broke your leg, you wouldn't feel bad about going to the doctor. But for some reason, if people have like a psychological issue, they feel like, oh, it's bad of me to go to the doctor for that. But it's not.
No, absolutely. Well, I appreciate it. That's cool, man. I appreciate the honesty and the vulnerability there.
Wait, am I gonna score? Is that what's happening here?
I think we need to talk a little. We should give an obligatory mention of this book, because I know the main thing people are curious about is the follow up. You and I texted about this briefly. Is the follow up to The Martian, The Venusian, about the blind designer, the blinds designer, and how that was for some reason canned.
The publisher just wasn't interested. It was going to be just all about a guy who makes Venetian blinds and like. Page after page after page of detailed technical specifications and explanations of exactly how Venetian blinds work. Maybe I'd delve into the history a bit. Anyway, they said I should probably stick to the space stuff.
Yeah.
And I tried to compromise about a guy who installs Venetian blinds in space, but they didn't go for that either. I don't know.
All right. Well,
about marketability,
That's right. And then, I mean, one thing about you I found interesting too is that you wrote this short story called The Egg, which of course, was originally a recipe book and all about the different ways that one can prepare. And then I actually read what The Egg really was. And I went, this is mind blowing. I'm like, wait, there's you. And then there's God as me. And I'm going, this is the way Wikipedia explained it. Basically my mind blew up. So, but that's.
You read. The Wikipedia, there's a Wikipedia article on the egg.
Yeah, I'm here to. You got to check it out because
the egg, the whole story is like 1,000 words long. So the Wikipedia article is probably longer than the story.
I know. So I do want to go back. So obviously, you know, let's go back because we need to go. This is how far back Andy Weir goes, right? So he worked on a game.
I am old.
Called Warcraft. Okay. Now Warcraft for
Warcraft
those
two actually.
Warcraft two. I know. So yeah, Warcraft. You know, do you remember the I built a flying machine?
Or I built a flying machine. Or yes. What? What do you want? Okay. Join the army, they said.
Or my favorite.
See the world, they said.
We're under attack.
So yeah.
Oh man, Blizzard.
Also the peons. More work. work. All right. Okay.
We're gonna have to come back. Weren't there? There were some great games. I mean, Diablo and StarCraft and the original Warcraft. So they were. That was awesome. Oh,
they made great games.
Yeah. Oh, that was so fun. So all right, I want to go back because we do. We should probably, I guess, talk about your writing career briefly, since that's ostensibly why you're here.
Touch on it, maybe.
So you were writing for a much long, like many other writers, writing for a much longer period than prior to your commercial success with it. But was writing always just a personal passion? And you said, you know what, like if I make it, great. If I don't, this is just something I love to do. And I'm actually curious if it was also a part of an outlet for any of your anxiety as well. Like, did you like writing as a controlled environment where you could kind of, I'm curious if that at all bled into it.
Well, mainly I did writing for the poontang, like most people. No. So I always wanted to be a writer, even when I was a little kid. Like, I mean, when I was a teen, when I was a tween and a teen, I was writing short stories, bad ones, but you know. And then when it was time to go to college, I had to decide between writing and software engineering. Both were things that were interesting to me.
Equally lucrative.
Well, yeah. I decided I wanted regular meals, so I went for software engineering. But I always still wanted to be a writer. And so I apologize for my camera shake. I'm literally, my computer is on a card table. Like a
no,
little...
it's very cool. It's very Blair Witch for my listeners.
Yes,
who
there we go.
Is,
oh,
you know?
I like it. I still like the, what is it, that Family Guy where Brian is, you know, a seeing eye dog for people and he's describing what's going on in a movie. And it's like the Blair Witch Project. He's like, nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. Something about a map. Nothing's happening. But anyway, I apologize for the camera shake. There's not a lot I can do about it. It's a rickety card table.
I promise you, it's not a big deal. Trust me, if they don't like this episode, it's not because of that. So you're good there. So anyway, so you wanted regular meals, so you opted for software engineering.
But I always wanted to write, and so I was always writing in the background. My first full-length novel was so terrible that I never even tried to get it published. Like, if the author knows it's bad, it's pretty bad, right? And then when I got laid off of AOL in 1999, I think.
That's called America Online for my listeners.
America Online, yes. When they merged
you've got with, mail.
When they merged with Netscape, which kind of shows
you. Oh, Netscape
you
Navigator.
That happened. Netscape
also,
Navigator.
The original browser. One of them. That's right.
One of them. Yeah. Netscape Navigator. When AOL merged with Netscape, they laid off me and 850 other people. So, you know, I didn't take it personally. But I ended up with a bunch of money in the form of stock options that were like, okay, you have to sell these or lose them, you know. So I sold them. And that turned out to be AOL's peak stock ever throughout all time, their highest. I would not have made a wise stock market decision if I'd been given any choice in the matter, but it ended up working out well. So I ended up with enough money that I could go a few years without having to work at all. And I said, all right, I'm going to write a book. And so I did. I wrote a book. It wasn't The Martian. It was called Theft of Pride.
I thought you say it's The Egg. You spent 3 years writing it.
I spent 3 years.
Hard work.
This week, I think I'm going to get another word in there. But and then I had the standard tale of woe that every author experiences where I couldn't get anyone interested in the book. I couldn't get an agent, couldn't get, you know, anything. And so after a few years of that, I said, like, well, I tried and I'll go back to writing. I'm sorry, go back to being an engineer.
Now, you did nothing else during this period. You just wrote. You didn't take any other jobs, no odd jobs or anything.
That's correct. Yeah, I was just trying to write. Although, of course, there was an awful lot of laying around and goofing off and stuff as well. You know,
that's part of the writer's
that's
process.
It's part of it. It's part of the process. Yeah. But anyway, so I, I couldn't break in. So I gave up and went back to engineering. But this wasn't a sad Charlie Brown music kind of situation. I like being an engineer. I like that job. I like the work. I like the team aspect of it all. It's cool. And I always enjoyed that job. So I just went back to work, but I was like, I still like writing. So I kept writing. And I would just write things and post them on my website. And that's where the Martian came from. It was originally like I'd been posting it to my website a chapter at a time. It was just a serial. And that it took off.
No pun intended.
Oh.
I like that, huh? So I'm curious. So when you when
I'm a
you,
dad now, so I get to tell dad jokes, by the
oh,
way.
that's
So,
awesome! Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
right. This
Thank
is a
you.
recent thing, right?
My baby is 14 months old now. I mean, that is indirectly why I'm talking to you from a card table, because we had the baby, so our house was too small, so we moved. Now we're in a new house, but we're remodeling the kitchen, so we're hiding at grandma's house right now while I'm, while our house is being torn up and et cetera.
And remodeled to look like the plastic wrap set of the
Yes,
Martian,
yes.
right?
My wife said no on
Okay.
that one. So no, it's just it's a kitchen remodel though, so the whole thing's all torn up. There's dust everywhere, and we have a baby. So we're at well, when I say grandma's house, I of course mean the baby's grandma.
Well, I feel like that's great for peace of mind is having a child, right? So, you know.
Yeah, so yeah, it's been a very chaotic time.
Oh man, well, can't wait till your kid's old enough to go, man, my dad wrote The Martian. And honestly, again,
Oh, come on, kids are never impressed by it. Well, one like no
for
matter,
your
he's a boy, right? He's a boy, so until he's about like 12 or so, I'm just gonna be the most awesome person on earth, bar none,
That's
like no matter what. And then I'm gonna be the most irredeemable dork on the planet. Like,
But you're Andy Weir. You don't write stuff about this planet. You will be
but
out.
it doesn't matter, doesn't matter. I'm just gonna be just a hopeless dork. Then maybe when he's 25 or so, I'll start to get smart again.
Well, I can't wait till you help him with his science projects when it's like, dude, they
I'm looking
also
forward to
it could
that.
actually go both ways though, because like the teacher could have really high expectations. Like the volcano with vinegar and baking soda is not gonna
That's
cut
not going
it
to cut
for
it.
Andy Weir's kid. So
I want to see a working reactor or you
yeah.
get an F. Yeah.
Yeah, I want you to grow potatoes with with fertilizer.
With your
Your
fertilizer.
fertilizer. So when you conceived of The Martian, did you have any idea of what it was to become? You were publishing it chapter time, and I'm actually curious if you could set the table for what self-publishing was like at that time, since this is sort of the Paleozoic era, if I
Yes.
recall. Yeah.
Back then, so once I finished chiseling the book, well, this was, so basically I had been self-publishing it to my own website, which was just like the Soviet tractor factory equivalent of a website. It's just like it was like I wrote the HTML myself in Notepad, right? It was just, white background with black text
And
and
what year was
blue
this?
handwriting. This would be about 2009 is when I started.
Okay.
When I started the started writing The Martian. I'd been writing other things before that, but yeah. And so I finished. I wrote it a chapter at a time. Took me 3 years to finish it. And then when I posted the last chapter, I was like, "There we go. I'm done. I'm going to move on to another book and another project."
How did people find
And
your website? And like, I mean, so you had this sort of Craigslist, comparable site. And then did you just like say, hey, friends and family, or did you go to like science fiction, areas? How did people find the
I didn't make any attempt to market. Basically, before I started posting narrative fiction online, I was making a web comic called Casey and Andy, which was a silly, gag-a-day web comic, and that had about 50,000 regular readers that I built up.
Oh, wow.
And then, so I had a mailing list for that, and then I also started narrative fiction, so I ended up getting a small percentage of them over to my narrative fiction side, and so. All in all, I had about 3,500 regular readers by the time I was writing The Martian. And that sounds impressive, but stops being impressive when you realize it took me about 10 years of posting content, literally about 10 years of posting content before I accumulated that many readers. So I had this slow buildup of readers. Anyway, once I finished The Martian, I got emails, people saying, "Hey, I love this story, but I hate your website. Your website is crap, you're garbage, and you should feel bad." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're right." And they said, "Well, e-readers are sort of a thing now. Can you just post it in a format that I can get in an e-reader. And I'm like, sure. So I figured out how to do that. I posted, you know, an EPUB and at the time, Mobi, which was another format that people used that I think is dead now. I'm not sure. But anyway, so I put it in some e-reader formats and said, there you go. Then other people emailed and said, like, hey, I'm not very technically savvy. I don't know how to like download a thing from the internet and put it onto my Kindle. Can you just put it up on Amazon somehow so I can get it through their system? So like, all right, let's see how that works. Well, Amazon has this whole, you know, self-pubbing system set up, Kindle Direct Publishing, KDP. It's pretty good. I mean, they take, you get 35% of your cover price. They take the rest. Other than that, that's it.
Which is infinitely more than the traditional publishing model. So,
yeah. Well, when you're getting zero, yes. yeah. And so I went ahead and said, like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I posted it. And so then I told my readers, okay, you can read it for free on my website, or you can download it for free from my website, or you can pay Amazon 99 cents to put it on your Kindle for you. Because one other thing is you're not allowed to give it away. On Kindle, you're not allowed to self-pub for free. They actually lose money on every Kindle they make. It costs them more money to make a Kindle than it costs you to buy one.
Interesting.
But they know that they're going to make money because you'll be buying books to read on it.
The Venetian and
the Venetian and the Louvrian and so on. But so it's actually a loss leader. So to keep that from being a straight up loss, they say like, okay, no one's allowed to give away books on Kindle. You've got to charge for them. So we get our cut. So I charged 99 cents, which was the minimum they allowed. And I said, all right, so there we go. And people just started buying it. It sold like crazy. I think part of the reason is because it was only 99 cents. And it got around by word of mouth. It's one of those things that you can't really do on purpose. You just get lucky and it happens. It took off.
Wow. That's awesome. And so you had no idea it was going to happen, and then it took off. And then did you actually make enough from the Kindle sales to finance your life?
No, okay. Not at all. Yeah, no way.
So you're getting 25 cents per
35, just about 35 cents per copy sold. I'd sold about 35,000 copies, you know, by the, I don't know, within like 6 months or so, something like that.
So about the price of your COVID stimulus check you got. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Something like that. But I'm trying to think. Then I was approached by a traditional publisher. And it wasn't until I got that traditional publishing deal, and in fact, the film deal was already in place by the time I quit my job. Like I said, I really liked being a programmer. I wasn't in any hurry to leave. I liked the job I had, too. When I did resign, it was because I needed to take all my time to start working on my next book, because that was now my primary source of income. But it was not a take this job and shove it kind of thing. It was like, oh, I'm going to miss you guys. I was a happy little cubicle dweller.
There you go. So you were the guy in Office Space, basically.
No, that guy was really unhappy.
No, well, right? Yeah. Well, there's Milton. Milton liked his job, remember, with his stapler.
Yeah. Well, he set fire to the building.
That's true. I guess that's sort of the one, like, sort of, you know, blemish on his otherwise stellar track record. I mean,
this may affect your performance review.
That's right. All right, so Martian gets optioned, and were you like, oh my gosh, this is gonna happen? This is gonna be a movie? Or had you inculcated the healthy skepticism of Hollywood at this point?
Massive healthy skepticism. Like, okay. At the time, it said like, oh, Fox wants the film rights, and my agent said, okay, well, we'll transfer for that over to CAA. I had an agent there. CAA, still have him. John Kassir is his name. Good guy. He's still my film agent. And, you know, John said, hey, here you go. I've got you this deal, but don't get excited. Any book that's even remotely successful ends up like they, you know,
the instantly studios. Option.
Yeah. The studios buy the option. And
this conversation right now is being optioned right now.
Probably being optioned.
Yeah. That's right. I've already sold the rights and we haven't even released this yet.
Right. Exactly. And so he said like, yeah, don't get excited, but just enjoy the money, you know? You get a little bump. It's not huge, but it's like just for the option. You get the big money if they actually make the film, But he said, like, they're never, you know, they're not going to make this probably, but just, you know, enjoy the money. And in a year and a half, the option will expire, the rights will come back to you, and you can sell the option again. And a lot of writers just cycle their books options and make money that way, just a regular stream of income, which I think is awesome. Good for them. So the larger your back catalog of books, the more of these option cycles you have going. And so that's cool. And I'm like, all right, that's cool, great. And then, but then they made the movie. So, you
And they
know,
ruined it all for you.
no, then now I don't get to resell the options. Oh,
Do you
no,
remember
but seriously.
what happened to make it kind of go from fantasy to like this? Like, was there one or two things that you're like, they actually, this led to this thing happening? Because I'm in the entertainment industry and I know how it, every time a movie is made, it's like an angel gets its wings. It is unbelievably rare, and it's an astonishment to me that a film gets made. Sometimes, even when you have all the right people, the big name, I mean, it's amazing.
Doesn't
So,
necessarily happen. Yeah.
how did The Martian get made?
Well, part of it is I think I owe most of it to a producer named Aditya Sood, who really thought it was a good property and said this movie, this if this was a movie, it would make a whole bunch of money, and he convinced 20th Century Fox to like you've already optioned it, now actually make it happen. Let's get someone in there. So we got also right from the get-go, Drew Goddard was interested. He's he wrote let's see, he directed, let's see, wait, no, yeah, he directed Cabin in the Woods. He wrote, I think, Cloverfield. He's pretty prolific. He was really interested in it. And so he wanted to write the screenplay and then direct it, and so that's pretty cool. That's pretty good. And so we talked, and he was really interested in doing that. So we had him on board, and then we got, I think maybe one of the biggest moments was when Matt Damon said he wanted to play the lead. That's when people started going like, oh, okay, this is a pretty big deal now. Then we lost Drew to a he went to go direct the next like Spider-Man film, I think.
I've heard of those,
And yeah, if you've heard of some of those. So then we didn't have a director, and then this kind of unknown art student guy, Ridley Scott,
Oh
popped in.
yeah,
Yeah,
that
that
guy.
guy. Yeah, he directed a commercial once.
That's right. I remember, and he had that movie. That was about the sort of extraterrestrial. You know, it was
Was it
like
ET?
ET.
I think it was
Yeah, it was
ET.
probably
Yeah, it
ET.
was
You
ET.
know,
I think it was ET. Yeah.
yeah, for sure.
As
Yeah.
your listeners are furiously
No, I. It's funny because Alien. I actually rewatched Alien recently, and it's funny because Alien and I love the franchise, but I look back as like there's really only two good movies to me in the
Yeah,
entire
Alien and
franchise.
Aliens,
Yeah.
right?
And the cool thing is they're two different genres, right? Which is like
Yeah.
Alien to me, and I'll probably get pushed by this, but I think
It's
it's my
suspense.
favorite, but it's top three, I think, horror movie. Like the sets are unreal. It's a great haunted house movie. It checks all the boxes. It has a Top Gun star, you know, Tom Skerritt in it, which is of course one of my criteria for, you know, successful filmmaking. And Sigourney Weaver's. And but the thing about that, the monster is only on camera for I think like a couple minutes tops, if that, right? And that's what makes it so good. Aliens, on their hand, just like awesome. Just
Action
like,
movie,
oh yeah.
action
And
flick.
Bill Paxton's eternal performance
Game
and
over, man.
game over, man. You just got our asses kicked, man. What's the line that says, like, oh yeah, we're on an express elevator to hell.
Hell.
Go wing down.
Yeah.
Or start your grinning and drop your linen. Oh man. Bill Paxton, miss you, man. That guy. What a
Rip in
legend.
peace, bro.
What a legend. But all right, so Ridley, you convinced Ridley Scott, there's a no-name director to come on
Yeah.
board, Matt Damon, and then they're like, and then the pitch meeting was like Matt Damon, Ridley Scott,
And that was kind
Mars.
of it. Yeah. Well, no, at that point, it was like then everybody wanted to be part of it. It started like, you know, steamrolling. And it really was a blessed production. You've heard of cursed productions. The Martian was the opposite of that. Like everything went right. Like
Wow.
there, I mean, there was one, the only thing that went wrong was at one point Ridley got like the flu and they had to stop shooting for like 3 weeks. And I'm like,
Man.
this dude's 80. Is he going to die? No, I don't know. Probably not. But yeah, and then it just like it finished ahead of schedule, you know, it was just like
Also
everything
unheard
went right.
of. Yeah,
Yeah.
and it did well.
Yeah, and it did great.
And one thing I love about your books, and I think it has to be stated here, is just that you you help people fall in love with science, and it's just, and it's such a,
Science.
you know, yeah. And I just, I mean, the movie was absolutely riveting, and it's funny. I like The Martian. I am more excited for Hail Mary. I think Hail
Well,
Mary is
thanks.
better than The Martian, and they're both amazing.
A lot of people say that, and that makes me feel good because that means I'm improving as a writer rather than spiraling
Well,
down.
it's not
So.
even, yeah, it's a subjective, but it's like the concept. I don't want to spoil anything for, because one, I did it on Audible, which some people are like, that's not reading a book. And I was like, first off, it's, I think it's a really cool, the
First
second,
off,
yeah, the
how
extra
dare you
sound.
speak to me?
Yeah.
Get off.
Yeah. Sick. I'm, yeah. But I was like, the sound effects alone make it
Yeah.
pretty cool. It's a cool auditory experience,
They
which
did
I,
a fantastic job. Well, Audible loves me. They can't get enough of me.
I
And
know.
I love them. I mean, basically, Artemis is my like least selling book. It's a book between The Martian and Project Hail Mary that people kind of often forget exists. But the audiobook of Artemis was like the second or third best-selling audiobook in Audible's history. Like they marketed it. They, you know, had a big ad, you know, big marketing and advertising campaign for it. They had events for it. They had the celebrity narrator, of course. It was Rosario Dawson narrates it. Like she's the reader. And so, I mean, they made a mint off of Artemis. And so when Project Hail Mary came around, they said, "We want it. We'll give you a bunch of money, a great deal as an author, et cetera, et cetera." And then they said, like, "We're going to spend a bunch of money marketing it." And now it's like selling like crazy. So they really put the effort in to make it a really good production.
Oh, they did. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyone who's not listened to Hail Mary, probably, it's one of those audiobooks where I was like, I was in LA a lot when I was listening to it. And I was very thankful to be stuck in traffic because I'm like, I'd be like silencing calls. Can't talk right now. I'm like busy, you know, because I'm like, I need to find out what's happening. Question mark, fist bump, beep, beep.
Yeah.
For those who, oh man, I was, yeah, there was, and oh man, I don't want to, I'm getting into plot details. I can't because there were some emotional moments. And I was like, no. But everyone I know just loved it, and it's such a no. I actually have, it's part of my $50 book club challenge. There's a few books that I tell people, if you don't like this, I will give you $50, and no one's ever taken me up on it. And Hail Mary is one of them. Like it's just, it's that fun, and you learn so much. So, which is a great question and segue into, you know, are you just recreationally into orbital physics and biology, and also and then. You know, was that just part of your day-to-day studying that made these books kind of natural for you? Because I know other
I
authors would be like,
mean,
I got to study this.
oh no, I had to do a bunch of research. Like, it's not like I just knew all this stuff off the top of my head. But I guess what makes me a little weird is I love it. Like, this stuff is really, really interesting to me. I love do the research is my favorite part of writing a book. Like, you know, so doing all the research on the orbital dynamics and stuff for the Martian, all the lunar stuff for the Artemis, and then Project Hail Mary, again, not too much in the way of spoilers, but a lot of things about relativistic travel, stuff like that. All that stuff, I love it. I do it for fun. So, I mean, I think it's time people understand I come out of the closet. I am a nerd.
Breaking news. I will do the headlines.
Breaking news. Yeah. No one.
Andy Weir on modest sized podcast. He admits likes science, right?
Yeah, right.
So,
Hey, this just in.
I'm curious, you know, in all the stuff you studied, what, two parts here. What has been the most fascinating thing, in your opinion, that you've learned? This is going to be really tough to answer. I know in space
Yeah.
travel. And then I'd say, is there anything as far as future developments or things happening right now that you're very excited about when it comes to space and technology or physics or anything like that?
I don't know. The most interesting thing to learn in terms of space travel, I mean, superlatives are always hard to answer.
I know.
But I don't know. I guess a lot of people just don't understand the scale of space, even within our solar system. So let me just give you some comparisons here. You know, people say, like, well, we went to the moon, right? So Mars should be next, right? That makes sense. Well, just to put it into perspective, let's say you're on a football field, right? And you're at one goal line and Mars is at the other goal line. You know where the moon would be?
No.
It would be about 10 centimeters in front of you.
Wow.
So that's the relative distances involved, right? And then you start talking about space and you're like, okay, well, I want you to imagine that our solar system, our entire solar system, from the sun in the middle to the orbit of Neptune, right? Which is now that now that you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson ruined Pluto for everybody.
Pluto was it for me. Pluto's out, man. You're out, Pluto. It's like Kenny Powers. You're out.
You know what Pluto says? Pluto says I was big enough for your mom. Anyway,
that is the best convergence of nerd and inappropriate humor. I mean, that's fantastic. Well,
side note, just a brief side note. I was on Star Talk. I've been on Star Talk several times, the Neil deGrasse Tyson's show. I mean, it's not as cool as your show, but you know, I have been on it.
Neil
Grassy something. Anyway,
Neil Diamond, I think it's
DeGrassi,
but,
yeah. DeGrassi High School. Anyway, I was on his show and we were live and everything like that. And I said, like, you know, what's weird, Neil, is that there's, like, you know, in Disney, there's Goofy, right? Who's like a dog. But he walks and he talks to people and, you know, just like Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse. But then there's Pluto, who is a dog. He has a dog house. He doesn't know how to talk. He eats like a bone and stuff like that. So, but Goofy and Pluto are the same species, right? But one of them's like a sapient member of society and the other one is a pet.
Oh, yeah, so, totally.
Yeah. So I said, like, so maybe they're not really the same species. So what do you think? Maybe Pluto is not a dog. So he just said,
that's so funny.
This big eye roll. Anyway, so getting back to that next little tidbit I wanted to point out is we've talked about the difference in between, like, how close the moon is versus how close Mars is. Well, the next one is, if you take our entire solar system and shrunk it down to be the size of a quarter. So a quarter is, you know, our sun's in the middle and the orbit of Neptune is just the perimeter of the quarter. The Milky Way galaxy, the galaxy that we live in, would be about the size of the United States. So it's just insane how big things are. And then our galaxy is just one of a bunch of galaxies in our cluster. And our cluster is just one of a bunch of clusters in a supercluster, and so on.
I want to put, like, flashing text, pause for reflection. Just like,
yes.
I mean, so, all right. So the vastness of space, this is something I wanted to ask you about. I mean, because it is, to quote Jodie Foster, you know, in Contact, great movie. He's like, you know, if we alone out there, she's like, well, if not, it'd be an awfully big waste of space, right? So once again, referring back to the canon of scripture as Wikipedia, from which all truth flows about you, it says that you're, you know, openly agnostic. And I'm curious, you know,
That's not like a proselytizing religion.
I know. It's like, oh, he's a practicing agnostic. You know,
I'm a practicing agnostic.
Yeah. But I'm curious because to mention Blake, who, you know, obviously we'll get to making fun of him as my last interview. But, you know, when you look at the universe and having studied so much and just the scientific constants that we see, you know, even in this vastness of space, et cetera, one thing that, like, always just struck me as odd, and I know, you know, just because something seems to be a coincidence doesn't mean it is, right? But, like, even just the fact that we can get solar eclipse on this planet, right? That because the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon, but is 400 times further away, it's like, that's so interesting that just happens to be a coincidence in which we can base, like, chronology and time, and, like, and it only happens on this one planet that happens to have, like, you know, just the perfect calibration for life, which I think, whether you're religious or not, a lot of science will say, the Earth is just, it's a practice of a lot of
very unique,
unique setup in there. So when you look and you study this and all this research of the universe, I mean, do you see evidence for anything more than, you know, just random coincidence?
I mean, so basically, like you said, I'm an agnostic. So my general answer to that is always just, like, as an agnostic, I'm the one religion guaranteed to be correct in that I don't know. That's my claim. And it's true. Like, I don't know. And I can prove to you, I don't know. See, ask me about God. I don't know. See, proof. So, however, I mean, this is completely out of my wheelhouse, religion, but I would say that if there is some sort of divine being or a creator or something like that, that entity would be, kind of too far beyond our ability to comprehend. And so it's unlikely that we'd be able to, you know, easily spot and prove or disprove its existence, right? So it's like, you know, an ant hill next to a super highway the anthill doesn't understand what the superhighway is, what it's for, or even that it's just a very, very small part of an even larger, you know, enterprise that is so much more important to its creators than the ants ever were. I don't know. I get a little, I don't know. I just start to shrug when I think about religion, because it's like, it's kind of by definition not science, right? It is faith based, right? And so it's based on things that you cannot tangibly prove.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I don't like it. I don't like it when people bash religion. I don't like anti-religious sentiment. I consider it, you know, when people mock Christians or any other faith, I consider that to be as petty and mean-spirited and socially unacceptable as when a religious person, you know, tells you you're going to go to hell or whatever their version of it is. And I just say, like, you know, that live and let live. If someone's not actually actively harming you in some way, just like, why do you feel like it's your place to mock their belief system? Just leave them alone.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I think, yeah, I'm just always curious, you know, it's when you haven't, I love asking people who, by virtue of their research or their profession, just kind of engage with sort of the dynamics of, I mean, space to me is the ultimate humbling experience. If you ever want to just grasp like how, and not small in a derogatory way, but just like taking comfort and like, wow, like there is just, I mean, just to meditate on the vastness of space makes me just really, I mean, just kind of stand in awe and go, you know, it's interesting. I don't understand how all of this can just be chance. Because we're still learning. I love too how much mystery there is too. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here too, because my quantum and my galactic knowledge is limited, as is evidenced every day on the
Everybody's
show.
Quantum knowledge is limited.
That's right. Well, some people, yeah. Some, I mean, there are
no,
people.
No. Who, I mean, literally, quantum physics has like, you literally cannot know these two things at the same time. Anyway, go on.
Well, what about 1984? Double think. I can do that.
Double think. Know?
I have double think. 2 + 2 = 4 and 5.
Yeah. We've always been at war with East Asia.
A recession is 2/4 of negative GDP.
But it's also not. Yeah, exactly.
Have a little shout out there. No, it's interesting when you're studying all that and you go, okay, we still don't understand gravity fully, right? I love Interstellar.
Not at all. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why
we have no idea.
No, and I love that there's still these great, as much as the calibration makes sense to me, I go, man, they're just forces. Like, I loved Interstellar only because of a attempt to visualize relativity and time. The distance and the effects of gravity on intergalactic travel. And you're like, this is like, how can gravity affect time? This is like,
yep, that's general relativity. And they had Kip Thorne, a Nobel laureate,
try to help
doing
us out
their math. Yeah, doing their math on that.
I know. Well, I thought what was cool about the movie is they had an event horizon, you know, a theorized what lies beyond a black hole, which is sort of like the 30-minute mark at my show. No one's really gotten past it, so we don't really know what's
so on your show, anything that transcends beyond the 30-minute mark just becomes an amorphous, unknowable part of the show. It's like so it's the event horizon, the Schwarzschild radius.
That's
of
right.
Your show is about 30 minutes.
I like to keep my episodes unreleased too, sort of like the cat in the box, because the second I release them, one of the realities is there, right?
Yeah.
So
before you release it, it both sucks and doesn't suck.
That's right.
Once you release it, it's going to collapse into one of those two.
And which one we can, you know, theorize on. So I appreciate the 12 people who are going to love and appreciate some of this humor today. So thank you. Kip's on their live streaming. Like, I didn't do that. So
12 people. So you're thinking half your audience is going to get this.
That's right. I know,
wow.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know. Hey, this show is adored by literally dozens of people around the world.
I used to say that. I say, like, I have ones and ones of fans, I'll have you know.
Actually, no, you know, it's funny. We had one of our highest chartings internationally recently. We were number 20 for comedy podcasts in Portugal. So I said, oh, get out the Porto. And if I go there, do I need security now? But then,
because you're a big shot
in Lithuania and Finland, I was down into the 150s. So, well, but maybe they don't like to laugh as much.
They're not ready for you.
I was ahead of my time and behind it too. I've also been accused of both. So, both of those realities. As we wind down here mercifully, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your writing process, because we make every author answer this question. But I'm curious, you love research, but what does a typical writing day look like for Andy Weir?
In a typical day, I'll get up in the morning, have my breakfast and whatnot, and then I will just do work stuff that isn't writing until about midday, until I eat lunch, basically. I'll be answering emails, scheduling meetings, doing things like this. Although at this point we're, you know, as of when we're recording this, it's about 4 o'clock my time. So that's a little anomalous for me. But usually I try to get my non-writing yet work-related things done by noon. Then after lunch is when I start writing. And I try to make 1,000 words a day when I'm working on a first draft. And I have a bunch of artificial rules. I say like, oh, I can't do these various things that I enjoy until I've made my words. So like no form of video entertainment is allowed. Not allowed to watch TV, no YouTube, no streaming, nothing. Not allowed to do any woodworking or metalworking. Those are my hobbies. I love doing them. I don't let myself do them, you know, and so on. And that's kind of how I try to eke out, you know, like 100 words, 1,000 rather, words a day. That would be a typical day for me when I'm working on a first draft. Now, when I'm doing edits, all bets are off. First off, when I'm editing, my productivity is pretty good generally. So I don't need kind of like artificial motivators to make me get my editing done. I'm excited at that point because I'm kind of like, okay, the end is in sight. This book is coming together. It's a lot easier to paint a house than to build a house, right? And then there's a lot of back and forth with the editor and a lot of phone calls. I also end up spending a lot of my time in phone calls with Hollywood related stuff for film. You know, I'm always one way or another find myself working on a TV show pitch or a film pitch or something like that. They never get picked up. But this is how it works. This is how it is.
Me too. As far as when you're in research,
Blake knows all about that too.
Oh, I know. That's right. That's
although they're making Dark Matter right now,
And he sold Upgrade to Spielberg, which is great. Cool. You know, and he's still trying to monetize that book with his, you know, limited collection of Wayward Pine Cones NFTs.
Yeah, Wayward.
So that's, I get it. Authors are forced to try and monetize these ancillary revenue streams, and it's we got to think how to productize The Martian. And I was going to ask if for breakfast you eat self-fertilized potatoes.
I do not. No, okay, actually, I do not. That is extremely not recommended.
That's right. That's right.
In general.
That's right. I appreciate that. All right. And so when you, what advice would you give to writers right now? I would usually say young writers, but I'm thinking anyone who has the bug to write and is thinking this could be for them, and they're thinking of abandoning their job at Blizzard, Microsoft.
Right.
What would you say?
Well, I have three bits of advice for any would-be writer. Number one is you have to actually write. I mean, that seems obvious, but when you're thinking about a story up in your head, it's just a daydream. You only find the problems when you actually start writing it down. The moment you start to write page one of your story, that's when you realize, oh, crap, this doesn't work. That doesn't work. How am I going to tell the reader all the stuff they need to know without being boring? That's when you're actually writing, the actual work of writing. You have to put words in your word processor. Okay, so that's number one, is you have to actually write. Number two, this is hard. You should resist the urge to tell your friends and family the story that you're working on. You can give them the elevator pitch, but don't give them all the details. Don't tell them the story. Most authors are driven by a desire for other people to experience their story. If you tell your story to people, that kind of satisfies that desire and it saps your will to actually write it. So make yourself a rule that says the only way anyone experiences this story is by reading it, even your closest friends. And then you can still give it to them a chapter at a time to get the sweet, sweet validation that you crave, but you don't just verbally tell it to them. And the last bit of advice is there's never been a better time throughout all history to self-publish than now. The old boy network between writers and readers is gone. You don't have to get anyone's approval to put a book out there for people to read. I definitely recommend trying to go the traditional route if you possibly can, but if you can't, then self-pub it. Take your chances.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, now I'm not going to tell you my story because you're just going to have to read it. So
there you go.
That's right. I'm going to make you read that. That's what's wonderful. This is a little bit of our lightning round here to wrap up here. So
all right.
What would you tell younger Andy, advice wise?
It gets better. Like, I had real problems with anxiety and depression when I was younger. I was like not really even a functional human being. I mean, I was a very unhappy person for most of my life. And I just wish I could tell that earlier version of me, hey man, it doesn't just get better, it gets awesome. You know, for me, it's like, hey, you become a world renowned writer, you get married, you have a kid, just stick, hang in there. You're getting there.
That's right. Well, I was worried. Some people say, oh, I'd tell myself, you're going to get a call from this guy, Ryan, one day, whatever he's
one day, whatever he says, just say no, just hang up.
That's right.
I mean, I guess maybe I, you know, I might warn my younger self about 9/11.
Yeah, fair. That's good. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. How did you, so you met your wife in LA.
Yeah.
What was that meaning? Was it love at first draft or what was that story?
It's kind of boring, but also cute. It's just like, we met in a restaurant. We were both staying at the same hotel and we were both eating, I think dinner or something at the same time. And we were sat in two tables for one, but they were like kind of near each other and we were facing each other the way they had seated us. And we got to talking and that's how I met my wife.
Oh, so it was truly just you were both there by yourself.
Yep. We were just, I was there for a business trip. She was there house hunting. And
Which hotel was it? So we can give a shout out for Mary.
Nah. I don't want to go too deep into the personal stuff. I mean, that's a special thing for my wife.
Okay, great. Well, I was going to give the hotel a shout out. No, that's
no
awesome.
Shout out for them.
And yeah, no shout out for them. Mm-hmm. And then last question. And if you don't have an answer for this, that's okay. Blake even had an answer for this. So that's, that's how.
Oh, okay. So you're going to make it a competition.
That's right. Okay. This is our Rod Serling segment for Twilight Zone. Have you ever
imagine had, if you will.
That's right. Imagine if you will. I'm here with Andy Weir going on 50 minutes and he's still talking.
submitted for your approval.
Have you ever had a sort of Twilight Zone-y or mysterious, coincidental moments in life that just kind of makes you go, ooh, that was a little spooky or that was interesting?
Well, it's really, I mean, I can think of one off the top of my head and it's just not even that interesting. But one time back in the 80s, I was like, this is going to be such a letdown. I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize in advance.
Don't worry. The entire interview probably is going to be so serious.
Yeah. So I had videotaped something in advance and then I was watching it on the VCR and it got to the end of the show. And then it went into the commercial break and stuff like that. And so there was a commercial on the videotape that I was watching. And I just pressed stopped. And for those of you who aren't a million years old, a VCR, when you press stop, will just go back to showing whatever's on whatever channel your TV was on. Right. And it happened to be that same commercial in about that same moment. So I pressed stop and then the VCR just stopped. But the commercial kept playing. And I was like, fuck is going on?
Ghost in the machine.
Yeah. So it's just by sheer coincidence, I happened to be watching a commercial on a tape. And when I stopped the tape, that actual commercial was airing.
Do you remember what the commercial was?
No. It was like a law firm or something from the 80s.
Oh, bummer. I was hoping it was like some like really poignant life advice, you know?
Yeah.
Like the guy pointing at you, you know?
And just like, no, Andy, you don't get to pause. I'm telling you. Yeah.
That's so funny.
No, nothing. Nothing. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, Andy, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you being here and I'm so glad that the rumors are not true. You're actually quite engaging and fun.
I know. I'm really sad that the rumors about you aren't true.
I know you convinced Gosling to somehow be involved in this. Now, have you thought through backups? Have we thought of, so we've explored Gary Busey. We've explored
Gary Busey. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker would be good. Yeah.
Actually, have you thought about Liam Neeson? You know, just like threatening Rocky.
Just turning red. I have a particular set of skills.
Skills that make me a nightmare for Astrophage. If you leave now, that'll be the end of it. You know, it's a shame he passed on, but Sean Connery would have been awesome in The Martian, I thought. You know.
I'm pretty much full.
That's right. People forget. That's the Red October was an intergalactic vessel, able to make it all the way to Mars. My first enemy, of course, the United States. My second enemy, fertilizer and making potatoes.
That works. That's right. Good impression.
Hey, thanks. Got to work it in there somehow. Anyways, there we've go. Been camping intergalactically with Andy Weir. If you have not checked out the Hail Mary Project, please do. It is absolutely worth a listen. It is so fun. And look for it on the big screen. And we will catch up with Andy, hopefully never again. Thanks again,
Andy. Never again. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for joining us, folks. If you want to help us out, and we're confident you do, go ahead and hit that subscribe button here on our YouTube channel. And if you ever feel like just listening to these, you can check us out on all major podcast streaming.